Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadwell. With me, as always, Thomas Brooks.
Hello, hello. I'm
so
back. From the trenches.
So you just came back from Furry Fiesta. And
I did.
It's in Dallas?
In Dallas.
Dallas.
Got to go home, eat some food. Oh, man. We had Texas Smokehouse, like South Asian cuisine fusion.
Ooh.
And there is nothing like a Vietnam rice bowl with like brisket on it.
Ooh.
Like, wow. Best part of the trip.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to Furry Fiesta next year.
We ate well.
That's good. Yeah. Now, so yeah, researching, which is kind of fitting. Like, we're going to delve into chapter 6, personal growth. And we were chatting very briefly beforehand of like the connection of like how fans grow and sort of understand themselves through the communities that they belong to, how they better themselves, how they expand their self-identity through their group identity. And you were saying, you know, a perfect example of that is through the fursona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So for the uninitiated, furries are technically a fandom. They're kind of weird in terms of fan communities, because they're not really a fan of a specific thing, so they typically lack a canon. And so what they lack in canon, they make up for in kind of this overall like appreciation for a genre of art, of like anthropomorphic art, which is kind of like, for younger listeners, this is like your Zootopia Disney movie. For like older listeners, it's like the Robin Hood Disney movie, right? And so that kind of has spurred this whole artistic community movement of creating, you know, like both like fan fiction and fan art of like maybe non-anthropomorphized works, to like extending universes of anthropomorphized works, to creating the fursona, which is, you know, a portmanteau of furry persona, which all furries typically have. I think there's like a small portion that don't have a fursona, but it's basically your like D&D character to interact with the community. And so everybody interacts with their fursonas just about. And so it's a character that you build and you create, and you figure out like what are their traits and their personality and what are they into and how do they behave with other people. And then you kind of assign like what kind of like non-human animal species it is to like hybridize with like a human. So thus the anthropomorphized aspect of it. And the furries are real cool with the fursonas, because it's not just like a, you know, oh, this is my character that I play, but it's like really intimately linked with like their own sense of self, and like specifically with kind of the idealized self. And so the fursona kind of becomes the person that you want to be, and the community itself creates the environment for you to essentially like cosplay as your ideal self with other people, and pretty much like practice the traits and qualities that you want to foster in yourself in a really safe and friendly environment. So for someone who's like really introverted, they may want to be more extroverted, and so they create this like, I don't know, like this wolf persona that they like embody in the community that gives them the opportunity to like be with a pack and like be expressive and like engage energetically with other people and take on those like metaphysical qualities of being a wolf or a dog or something like that. And so I think with this idea for today's episode of like, what is it? Self-development, personal growth. That's what it is. The furries really like have this down to like a technology of personal growth, I feel like. Like, it's not just, this book doesn't really touch on furries, which is kind of odd, but it does talk about like Like this idea of personal growth and eudaimonia, like drives people to watch television shows that they're fans of, right? But the furries kind of challenge that idea and say, hey, like we can take our fan interest and like channel it into a technology of like personal growth in a way that maybe like Harry Potter fans don't have.
Yeah, with like canon stuff. So I mean, I've looked at some of the research on like the there's research on like getting your house, designation in Harry Potter, like taking those quizzes with the bronies, My Little Pony fans. They're usually like latching on. I mean, they do create original characters, and so they're kind of doing that, but it's still like within the confines of the show, so it's not, it is limited. So you're still limited to your kind of like basic pony types, and then those say things about you, and that is based on the characters in the show. So if you're a unicorn, those traits are defined by the show itself, not necessarily defined by like the community or the person on their own. And but we see, I mean, we see some of the same stuff where they will take a favorite character, and the reason that they kind of latch onto those characters is tied to things like personal growth. So it's either a character that resembles them or that they want to be like. But it sounds like the furries, it's, I mean, it's probably both as well, that it's in part, but it's kind of all mashed into one character. It's not only who they are, but aspects of themselves that they want to explore in this sort of safe place with no canon. I don't know. Are there, this is, I guess, a question, because I'm thinking like, I don't know, what's my persona, right? What's my animal counterpart? There's probably still like norms within the community that are probably tied to the actual animals themselves. And so you're if you're a wolf, there are certain canon traits. It's not based on a show, but it's like just literal reality nature. This is like our perception of a wolf, and therefore if you have a wolf persona, then this is part of like what you're expected to be.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, but I think it's a much more basic because you can't really like point to, like, oh, in the show, the wolves acted like this, so you must act like this. It's more of like, like, I don't know if you had this relative growing up, but like, usually an aunt lives in a trailer and her like whole trailer is decorated with like dolphins and wolves and like Native American art she's picked up at like 7-Elevens, like across Route 66 in her youth. And she's like, and she has that one thing that's like, the wolf, the team play works well with others. And like, like some vague mystical thing, find your inner wolf in order to like express your like connectedness to community. Something like that, and it's like super benign, and you're like, okay, that said nothing. It's more like that in terms of like social expectations, I figure. But also, the furries are just kind of like chaotic in essence, so I think you could totally be like get away with like breaking those stereotypes of like whatever animal you chose.
It's everything's kind of fast and loose when it comes to what animal and what animals do, and it's all just like, I mean, I was gonna say something that might be too controversial. We have any furries who ever hear this, but like, I mean, are these basically like horoscopes for furries? Like you kind of project yourself.
Even less organized than horoscopes.
It's just like, I mean, maybe we need to go back to studying like Freud and Jung. Like these are just like base art, like not even archetypes, but just like base internal id impulse projections.
Maybe it could also be aesthetics, because a good number of furries also like do hybrid personas too, so they're not just a wolf, they're like a dragon wolf shark. So like I don't know if there was any metaphysical decision making going on in that process, or if they were just like, the wolf mask is cute, but also I want wings and a shark tail and the like dorsal fin. And then I'll make it all purple.
Fair. Not fair.
So like, I think aesthetics probably drive a lot of this, which we have a chapter on aesthetics. Because like you also have to think about it. It's not so much like even though like the character itself embodies the ideal self, the image is also equally important because that's how it's represented both in online forums as well as like in VR forums, as well as like if a furry gets enough money, they then create that persona in a fursuit. Because those things are expensive. And so there is like this aesthetic quality too, where it's like the species of animal, sure, it's important in that decision, but also like the aesthetics of what like you're trying to get out of how you're being perceived are also like just as important. So you get a lot of weird stuff.
It opens the door to so many more choices to like what your, I guess, persona can be. So.
And there is like some trendiness related to the persona too. Like when I first started working with the furries like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, the thing that I saw a lot of was like this, like the mask itself was skeletal, but then the rest of it was cute and fluffy, and that's like a particular genre of furry that the name escapes me right now. And I'm seeing like less and less of that over time. The really popular ones that nearly that account for nearly all the furries are like wolves, foxes, deer. Trying to think if there's anything else, but like those are the main ones. And then occasionally you get some like really interesting new stuff. So like this year at Furry Fiesta, I saw a jumping spider. So like one of those little bitty fuzzy spiders in your house. That was their persona, and it was so cute and so novel. I was like, I love that. Like,
I
I
love
haven't seen
that.
that before. Birds are getting more popular right now too. So saw a lot of birds. But yeah, no, I think there's probably some group. It's partially like, how does this animal connect to me? But also it's aesthetic, and it's also kind of dictated by group norms as well. I am going to postulate.
And maybe we'll come back to this when we talk about things like display and other things, because like that's like another thing too. Like you can then have someone ask about your persona, and then you get to like develop, continue to develop and explain and elaborate the kind of intricate aspects of your character, you as opposed to, you know, how does your wolf differ? What does that mean? That probably goes like to op some optimal distinctiveness stuff. Like, yes, I have another wolf. But this is my wolf. Like, this is what my wolf does. Or
Right.
my
I'm a
wolf is,
wolf dragon.
right. My wolf is purple and part shark.
Right.
Like, cool.
But yeah, no, so that's kind of one aspect of the personal growth that I think is, you know, across the furry population, right? But then there are some like really specific instances where like the fursuit and the fursona itself, I think, is also like real, could be used as a technology for like overcoming like specific adversity too. So I'm thinking of like one of the norms with fursuiters is that they don't talk when they're in suit, or they just make animal noises or something like that. And like it's our job as the non-suitors to like they're the suitor is the center of gravity in all social situations, right? And that makes it a really interesting dynamic for say like people with autism, where like you've removed the necessity of like having like visual cues when having a conversation. So like if you're wearing a mask, you don't have to like maintain eye contact with the person you're interacting with. And also, you no longer have to like insert yourself into a social situation because the social situation is just gonna follow you across this hotel. And so like it provides this like outlet for people with autism to like have like these social interactions that like we take for granted that are like incredibly difficult for them because of certain aspects of autism that like people who don't have autism like read as weird. But
Right.
you throw them into an animal suit and they don't have to say anything, and all of a sudden the entire like social environment moves around to them instead of them trying to figure out like what's they're in and how do they like efficiently navigate that situation.
There's probably some ability to like de-individuate, like almost like disassociate as well. Like you can kind of like lose yourself and this like aspect of yourself that does that may make these social situations far more awkward, and instead you're this different character, and this different character is very gregarious, very out there, and you don't have to talk, you don't have to, but you can still engage and be playful and interact with people, yeah, without that sort of like those labels and that sense of self that labels you as you know having an autism diagnosis or having some other social anxiety or something like that.
Yeah. So there's that aspect I think is way cool for like personal growth, because like
Yeah.
that's some incredibly valuable social interaction. And then the other aspect is that like, and this is currently a hypothesis. We should have data on this soon, but the idea of like experimenting with like gender expression through the persona too is something where like if you're having a gender crisis, right? Like, then that persona can then create that like pathway for you to kind of visualize, like, okay, like if I'm going to now inhabit like the opposite sex role, then my persona can be that. And then I can, you know, slip it on and then try it out and see if that's something that actually fits and works for me.
Yeah, I mean that probably we probably see that as well, but I don't think to any degree like we would with the furries. I mean, you can't really see it with something like cosplay, because there's still like the you aspect, unless you've got some sort of like full body. I mean, unless you're doing something like a fursuit.
I will say there is a Princess Peach cosplayer at the furry convention, and they also go to the Anime Fest and Acon and stuff like that in the DFW area. And they are easily 6'5", and they have the full like rubber doll suit and the peach thing and like the massive dress and like the only like, you know, if you had just seen them and they were like, you know, 5'6", you'd be like, oh, that's a great Princess Peach cosplay. But then you're like looking up at her and you're like, that's a great Princess Peach cosplay. You're like, I don't know what you're identifying there, but you are definitely playing with gender.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing I guess with this, and like you've touched on it a lot, is I like the very end of the chapter gets into the Lewandowski research on self-expansion. And that a lot of that early research focuses on like relationships. So like we form relationships with other people, and then that allows us to self-expand. So like with our partners and our friends, we can kind of be more and explore, and then through something like fandom with our identities, we not only get to build those self-expanding friendships with other people, but with something like the furries, we also then get to build those with like these original characters that we're creating. And it's like, so I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of like with the history of fandom, I mean, people have been writing fan fiction for a while. But like self-insert fan fiction's a little different. I mean, unless you're like Dante. Yeah, I'm thinking of like some modern fan groups that might fit, but like the furries have been around since the 70s. They might be like some of the original, if not like the OG, self-expanding through original character creation. I mean, outside of like what we might see in like professional circles where you have some like writer inserting themselves into their work and stuff like that, like as a true
Right.
novel experience. Yeah. I don't know. I find it. I'll see if I'll find it. There's a really good, if anyone ever wants to understand I mean, at least the beginning of the phrase, it doesn't really get past like the 80s, but there's a really good like first 10 years of the furry fandom documentary. That kind of explains like the origins and like how they started and like what kind of brought these people together. And then probably the first big schism in the fandom, which was where one of like the co-creators kind of brought in this sort of like sexual aspect to it. And that kind of created this schism between people who just wanted to appreciate animal art and like do the furry stuff versus like it being kind of a kink scene. And I think like the furries have like found a happy medium like at this point, but then it was like very divided. But like really interesting bit of like fandom history, like because it goes back to early fan get-togethers and stuff.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And I will shamelessly hawk this biblical tome for readers, which is free. It's PDF. It's the Fur Science, a decade of psychological research on the furry fandom. If you would like to know about the last 10 years of the furry fandom. So watch the documentary for the first 10 years, read the book for the last 10 years, and then you should be
Yes.
caught up.
Yeah. I mean, we don't talk about like early 2000s fandom. So,
And I'll just say I wrote chapter 10. So all of your sex questions can be answered there.
that's usually the
Maybe not all
spicy
of them.
stuff, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is a good stopping point. So we have talked about self-expansion. We've talked about personal growth. We've talked about direction. In the next chapter, chapter seven of all places, like we're going to the beginning. We're gonna talk about fandom. We're gonna talk about like one of the fundamental aspects of identity within a fan community. So until then,
I'll see you then.
we'll say goodbye. Bye, everyone.
Bye.